This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Peter Yvonne is leaving his job as executive director for the Rutchakachimut Native Council in Bethel, but he saw some big milestones at ONC during his nearly two-year tenure there. It's hard to say goodbye to a job you love.
This is a position that I had no idea what I was getting into, but I have, like I said, absolutely zero regrets because I've learned so much. This has been like the best job I've ever had.
But Peter Yvonne has a big family of five young kids and a wife, and both of them work.
This job takes just a little bit more than I can kind of handle right now.
The executive director role at ONC is a high-profile one, and Yvonne is used to fielding calls at all hours of the week and attending many late-night meetings after work with the ONC board. He says while he values that experience, he's missed cheering for his kids at a cross-country meet or basketball tournament. So he's returning to his old employer, the Association of Village Council Presidents, Regional Housing Authority, which is a separate organization from the tribal consortium AVCP. Yvonne says they offered more time with his family and a chance for him to take on a challenge that he knows very well, a lack of housing in the region.
I grew up in a HUD home. My father was one of the home buyers of the year previously, and so it is pretty important to me to basically make sure that I can do what I can.
Yvonne grew up in Akiachuk, but has since moved to Bethel. He took over ONC in June of 2018, right when the tribe was becoming more public in its opposition to the Donlin Gold Mine. During his first week on the job, ONC put on the first public march against the proposed mine. ONC's board told Yvonne that protesting the Donlin Gold Mine was a priority, but that wasn't his only focus as executive director.
There's been quite a few changes. We have developed several different departments. We've acquired several grants that will basically carry through for ONC that I'm hoping that will continue.
Those grants include expanding its senior services, partnering with the Tundra Women's Coalition on Domestic Violence, and increasing suicide awareness. ONC will also relocate to a new space at the Bethel Native Corporation Complex and finally see the fruition of a partnership with Bethel Department of Police.
We have actually drafted a joint cooperative agreement with the city.
ONC got funding to hire tribal police officers in Bethel that would help local law enforcement. The tribe plans to discuss this draft agreement with the city at a special meeting at the end of February. Yvonne says he hopes that the projects that began under him will blossom, and he hasn't ruled out coming back once his kids are grown.
In my mind, hopefully, that I'm leaving this place in a better position than I found it.
Yvonne leaves his post at the end of the month. And finally, what is the future of salmon in a warming world? Recent research indicates that extreme warm temperatures are sometimes turning Alaska's salmon streams into unfriendly, even lethal habitat. Johanna Urich reports that while Alaskan scientists are just beginning to study the impact of warmer temperatures on salmon streams, it is already a familiar reality for many Canadian fish biologists.
Warming temperatures in the Fraser River in British Columbia have long been known to hurt and even kill sockeye salmon. It's been studied for decades. And Vanessa Von Biela, a biologist with the Federal Alaska Science Center, told those attending the Alaska Marine Science Symposium last month that a small increase in river temperatures on the Fraser can mean a lot less salmon spawning.
More than half of a salmon run can die in the river. That's a combination of the in-route mortality and that pre-spawn mortality where they die on the spawning ground.
The fish that survived the tanks showed changes in both genetic markers and proteins at the various temperatures. This allowed her to create a way to measure heat stress in Yukon Kings.
And those salmon tended to look healthy other than the fact that they were dead.
Von Biela tested Yukon King salmon for 6 hours in water that was 14 degrees Celsius or 57 degrees Fahrenheit, all the way up to 21 degrees, which is 69.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
And we certainly felt that the fish in the 21 degrees treatment were stressed. In fact, that was the only treatment where we had mortality, and about half of the fish that we put into that treatment did die.
The fish that survived the tanks showed changes in both genetic markers and proteins at the various temperatures. This allowed her to create a way to measure heat stress in Yukon Kings.
And that is sort of our small experimental set that allows us to classify all the other fish we catch through the drainage.
Now, all Von Biela needed was to get water temperatures up the river and some fish tissue from the catch to sample. The samples were easy to get, the water temperatures were not. The State Fish and Game Department monitors water temperatures at the mouth of the Yukon, and that water is relatively cool when the fish are starting their run up the river in June. She needed temperatures in July from the middle of the Yukon River's main stem, where kings are swimming through to spawning grounds. Von Biele found the data she needed at a fish wheel.
This is data from the Middle Yukon River. This is Stans Ray's data. He is a citizen scientist and a subsistence fisher who has a fish wheel. And he spent several years attaching a tidbit data logger to his fish wheel and gathering these data.
The fish wheel showed water temperatures higher than 64 degrees Fahrenheit for extended periods of time, but nothing as high as the 69.8 or 21°C top range she had tested fish for. Working with a host of collaborators, Von Biele gathered data from Yukon River fish in 2016 and 2017. They found plenty of evidence of heat stress in the 477 fish they sampled. Because 2016 was a little cooler than 2017, they could document what that change meant to the king salmon.
Like here at the Rapids River Fish Wheel, where in 2016, in the cooler year, only 18% of the fish showed evidence of heat stress. But then in 27, where it was warmer and the warmth was more prolonged, we had 97% of fish be classified with our heat stress.
That stress was there, even though the fish wheel never showed temperatures as high as 21°C during the two-year study. But Von Biele also points out that kind of heat did occur at the Andreski River, a tributary of the lower Yukon.
And in 2016, we even had temperatures exceed 21 degrees Celsius, and the weir crew there did see those outward signs that fish were struggling and lethargic, and they actually, about a third of the season, they didn't even handle fish for age, sex, length, because they didn't want to have any additional stress. And here at this site in 2016, we estimate that 98% of the fish that were handled had evidence of heat stress.
Vanessa Von Biele says her research indicates that fish managers may want to reconsider a fundamental assumption that letting salmon swim by fishing nets necessarily means they'll make more. In 2019, some salmon failed to spawn, dying with full egg sacs on the spawning grounds.
So we can no longer think that escapement always is a successful spawner.
To manage in the new warmer reality, Alaskan biologists could look toward their Canadian colleagues who use real-time water temperature data to manage the Fraser River sockeye fishery. For KYUK, this is Johanna Urich.
This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yukton coming up.